All right. On this episode of the Nostalgia Factor podcast, we're talking about like horror films that we've been watching.
All right.
Talking about some movies, some music.
You know what we talk about if you're listening out there. We got another exciting episode of us just talking out of our ass about things we know all about. It's going to be exciting.
And we're going to talk about some absolutely shitty computers.
Thanks.
All right.
Stick around.
Okay.
What's up?
I just spent, 2.5 hours?
Okay. There's nothing like a Rubik's Cube to get your day going. A Rubik's Cube that only has one side, and it says fuck you all over it. What are we talking about?
Fucking your XP machine from, 2004.
It's a Dell PC, 500 megabytes of RAM. It was a home computer, an office computer for typing letterheads and bullshit, and I've utilized it now as a jukebox. I got my iTunes, got all the H.R. Giger art. That's about it. You know, I use it as a conduit for, you know, receiving and
if it makes you happy. It's the kind of computer you could replace on Craigslist for $15.
$8, yeah.
You know, somewhere in there.
What's really cool is, you know, as far as YouTube or any kind of basic internet stuff, it's out of the fucking question.
The absolute right thing to do with that particular computer is to wipe the hard drive, reinstall Windows, and scold you for the shit that you do on it.
Or shoot it on video with, a shotgun.
Yeah.
One of my favorite things about this computer was the first time I showed Dwayne this computer, I was like, hey, check this out, dude. My internet's real slow. He's like, scoot over. He's like, what the fuck are you doing? Take the fucking antivirus off. You can't run the internet and the antivirus at the same time, you fucking idiot. You don't have enough RAM.
Seriously, it's a very low-end computer, and he's running McAfee on it. And that's fine and all for a high-end computer, but it's just a resource hog, and you don't have any resources. So fuck it. If something happens to it, you wipe it and reinstall Windows, which is what needs to be done, but I don't have any installed disks on me. But moving on. Update from last week. Shia LaBeouf went
and got himself. Why were you fucking with this computer? Stupid fucking computer, by the way. I plugged it in after a year or something. I finally connected it to a wire, went on Mozilla, and I've gotten taken over by this WiseBar shit. And Dwayne's like, oh, let me fucking look at this shit. And just, we've gone malware, we've done this, we've done that, and it's still fucked. So that's it. Throw it in the dumpster. I'm going to keep it as a jukebox and fuck the internet. So you hear that out there? Isn't that the internet that we're talking about
here? I think we're talking to the
internet. We're on the internet.
Occasionally the internet listens.
But on the internet-y.
Not often.
Yeah. Well, we're here if you need us.
Update. Shia LaBeouf got himself arrested again.
He's our boy. Man, did you see the photograph? The mugshot's like a fucking... He looks like a terrorist, man. He almost looks like Osama bin Laden in the younger years.
he looks like somebody who's made a lot of bad life choices. But obviously, he's made some good choices, and he's been in some great films.
Holes can't be...
He's a pretty good actor.
I was pretty bummed out because I thought it was a completely different movie. I thought it was like
he's clearly still going through...
soul searching.
Youth Gone Wild... Still kind of figuring it out,
yeah. You know,
acting out a bit.
So he's jaywalking, or no, he failed to observe the don't walk in a crosswalk bit, and then proceeded to I am the youth. Fuck you.
Right.
At 7 p.m. drunk in Austin, Texas.
Yep.
Is that right? Fuck yeah, Shia. Hold it down, brother.
So it's October, and I've been watching nothing but, except for my shows, I'd have to watch Doctor Who.
My shows.
My show.
I got to watch my shows too, man. I'm revisiting Breaking Bad. I'm watching The Mighty Boosh. I've finished all the unseen episodes from season one that I hadn't gotten completely familiar with. I'm revisiting season one of Mighty Boosh. Fucking hilarious.
Yeah. Recently, speaking of that, I tried to watch the first episode of the second season of Noel Fielding's Luxury Comedy, and it didn't go well. I was a little bit not happy with it. I turned it off.
Oh man,
I'll revisit that. But it lost something in season two already.
I can't tell you that much. I got hit with a line about the zookeepers. He's the guy that's from I don't know the actor's name. He's from Snuffbox. He's also from
Rich Belcher.
I don't know which one he is.
I think it's Rich Belcher who you're talking about.
But he's not the main. He's not the one that's more reoccurring on the.
You're talking about Todd Barry, maybe.
Probably he's the one that plays the boss that inherits the company and the IT.
Yeah, that's Todd.
Father! Whoa! Sorry to clip out. I'm not gonna bellow like that much. But that's great. Look at that.
Ooh. Yeah, that's rough.
So, that guy has this mustache and he's competing with Howard Moon. He's like, there's a story about it. He took down an animal. He's like he pulled out a gun he had hidden in his mustache.
Nice.
So great. And then like later in the episode, he fucking, another story, he slays him with the sword he had hidden in his mustache. And so anyhow, that's,
it's been a while. I'm due to revisit the Mighty Boosh.
Oh God, it's irreverent.
4 or 5 years since,
and they're crimping in the first stuff, and they're talking about
that crimping shit's the badass.
Oh God. So yeah, let's talk about some horror movies, man. I watched recently You're Next, which is really fun. Like at the beginning of it, I was kind of apprehensive.
It's basically one of those house in the middle of nowhere.
Kind of reminds me of Funny Games, but not as sadistic and a little bit more.
Yeah, it's not as memorable as Funny Games. Funny Games is.
It's like Funny Games and The Purge mixed together with a little bit more like irreverent, kind of like Evil Dead violence, because some of the like the creativity and the violence, I like that. And the gore and special effects makeup's really cool. It's real subtle, but still nice and pumpy. There's a lot of thump, thump, thump kind of heartbeat gushes, and there's some darkness to it, and a lot of comedy and irony, which I find to be my favorite element of it. But that was a good one. What do you got?
Let's see, the first one that I watched this past year was, it was Kevin Smith's Tusk. I finally got around to watching Kevin Smith's Tusk.
Oh, absolutely, the podcast guy.
Yeah, podcast absolutely. Guy.
That's why we're doing this podcast. I was like, Dwayne, I watched Tusk, man, we can do podcasts. The Walrus guy can't do it anymore. What a funny movie. Yeah. That's almost like, it ends with him like a, spoiler alert, was he like hanging out just at a pool as himself with the people that care about him, like feeding him?
Yeah.
That's a dirty, scary.
I would call that movie equally parts disturbing and equally parts hilarious.
Absolutely.
Like, of course, he's now a walrus. He's not going to be able to come back from that. And
of course. And Michael Parks.
And how sad is it? And the sad music as he eats that fish and his friends are like, he's a walrus now.
Yep. And, Michael Parks just plays an incredible character in any film.
Yeah, Michael Parks.
But he really took that on, and loved
Johnny
it.
Johnny Depp kind of comes through. He doesn't phone it in, as Johnny Depp has been doing lately.
Oh my God, I forgot Johnny Depp's in that. He plays like FBI or something, or like an investigator or something.
As a Canadian inspector.
A Canadian inspector.
Excellent. Yeah, he's got that like fixed kind of like a Canadian-French accent.
Okay, yeah, I watched it once, and I think I did a three-pack that night. I watched... I want to say, and this is a really weird thing to watch in a row, but I think I watched Tusk, and then I watched Nightcrawler, and then I watched, it's got Blue in the title, and it's got the guy from Murder Party, where he's the guy that hangs out in the car all the time, and like, he's dirty, and then he's clean shaven, and it's like, very...
Is it Blue Ridge?
No, it's called Blue. I can't remember what it's called, but that was a pretty fucking fucked up movie.
I could swear it's called Blue Ridge.
No, it wasn't. Blue.
Because it's like takes place on the Blue Ridge Parkway, like a little bit's filmed up there. Right here in Virginia, too, I think.
I don't think so. But I might be wrong.
We'll
have to look that up.
It's definitely by the same director.
Deep Blue? Not Deep Blue.
As Murder Party. And Murder Party is a Halloween classic. If you have not seen Murder Party, get on that one.
Everybody fucking dies.
I fucking love Murder Party.
It's so funny. And I love that he, you know, the Murder Party has a great ending also, where it's just like right back to it. He's like, eh, okay. Let's just go back to my life as usual. Whatever. That happened.
So this year I'm trying to watch horror films that I've never seen before. Each October I'll sit and just watch horror films all month long. I'll save stuff for the month. And some months over the past few years I've been unemployed during those months.
Oh, damn.
And I've watched, you know,
all of the fucking franchise of Freddy and Jason.
Like literally 300 movies in a month.
Absolutely. Kind of it's the only way to do it.
So, yeah, over the past few years, I've watched a good 700 to 900 horror films. But there's still even obvious ones that somehow or another I haven't seen.
How about this one? You ready? 1998, perhaps 99, I did this. There was a Halloween party, you know, there was like the teenage thing where, you know, some kids are getting way too drunk and puking. Some were like doing the heavy petting thing down in the corner behind the fucking whatever in the red light room. And I was sitting in the midst of all the chaos in this foyer with a fucking a bunch of VHS tapes from the goddamn video store, a little TV with the VCR built in, and a fucking Lazy Boy. And that was all that was in that room, and people going to and from the smoking room to this. And I just kind of watched movies all through. So I watched several of Friday the 13th, but what I want to get to is the Psycho movies. I watched Psycho 1 through 4. Which takes Anthony Perkins. So Anthony Perkins, actually, two nights ago, I watched Psycho. And I hadn't seen it since then. And my God, was it much more of a movie now? Because that was a while back.
Now that you've matured to
correct,
like, you know, visual storytelling.
Yeah, I mean, it was like maybe 14, 15 at the time watching those. You know, I'm 31 now. So looking at those films from this angle of life experience, it's much more... I thought it was awesome. I was just like, holy shit, Anthony Perkins is incredible in this film. And then, you know, I think on into the, like, what, like 25 or 30 years later from that film, which was made in like 1960. Right? Wouldn't you say?
Yeah. Oh,
like maybe like Psycho 4 might have been like maybe like late 80s, early 90s, because, you know, that was the latter part of his career in life.
Yeah, I don't think anybody needs to see Psycho 4.
No.
I think Psycho 1 and 2, and you're good. And 2 is stretching it, but 2 is oddly really good.
No, they're interesting. I thought they were really interesting just because I like the evolution of it's spanning on characters, you know, like with
also,
RoboCop.
Also, Jennifer Tilly's sister is in 2, and she is hot as fuck. I can't remember the actor's name, but it's Jennifer Tilly's older
it's
sister.
It's Lily Tilly, is and it? She's got a little pink. Just yes, like her sister?
She's gorgeous.
I'm
she
pretty
does,
sure.
She does nude. It's great.
You know, okay, so here's another one I just watched. You ready?
Yeah.
Frankenhooker.
Great movie.
How fucking awesome is that? And Abby's
one
actually going to be Frankenhooker
for
Halloween. No. She's got the purple wig already.
No shit.
Yeah, she put on the wig and it freaked me out because I was like, it's not the same purple as Frankenhooker, but man, it's interesting when you're like, you know your woman and then you see her with like different hair and then you're like, whoa, I don't know you. That's kind of... Whoa, look at your hair. That's fancy. So, you know, there's a Predator mask in my futures.
One of the actors, the main actor.
Oh, I got a mask in the mail. I got a black mask coming. I got pantyhose coming for my face.
The main actor from Frankenhooker was in one of the films that I just seen for the first time. And I believe it's one of your favorites. But I had never seen it.
He's in Jerky Boys.
No, it's Street Trash.
Oh, Street Trash. Fucking great.
Fucking
movie.
This is a movie that's got it all. This is a movie that's got a devil liquor that will melt you. It's got demonic fucking homeless people. It's got dicks flying through the fucking
air.
It's got
like Vietnam vet sadists.
Yeah, it's
that
got
fuck
buses full of
hobos and
Vietnam
hookers.
Fucking flashbacks and people who get fucking choked out and raped.
Evil
in public.
Zombie Vietnam flashbacks.
And it truly is 80s street trashy.
And it was made in Brooklyn. What's really cool about Street Trash is that it was given to me in this really cool exchange. I was in Heva Hava at the time, and we were kind of like a go-to local band. There's like a local record label. Flannel Girl Records, and they would do these like indie shows, and we would end up being like the local, you know, hard hitting band to play with these out of towners that were coming through on tour that they would book. So I met these guys from France. They were both from Paris, and it was a two piece, and it was also like they had another band that was part of their little scene. So two of the guys from that four or five piece band did their own thing. Anyhow, they were really cool. Guitar player who sang with lots of effects and shit, and then a drummer who, in place of his two rack toms, had a guitar that was open tuned. So he had a kick drum, a snare, hi hat, guitar, floor tom, and cymbal. So he would be like, with another guitar player.
What's it got to do with Street Trash?
The guy, they didn't speak much English.
Okay.
So I'm transcending a language barrier by talking about like Evil Dead. I'm like, you guys, like I said, French horror movies, man. Martyrs, dude. Like I start talking about a couple of films and I can't remember at the time. I guess I was a little bit more up to speed at that time. I'd seen a couple of French films that were really kicking ass. What was the other ones? Is it like Let the Right One In? Is that French? Where it's like the vampire movie? I don't know. We started talking about films. Anyhow, I was talking about Evil Dead and like Dead Alive. And he's like, oh, you know Street Trash? And I was like, what? He's like, Street Trash. And we were like back and forth. And it was amazing because here's the kicker. We had another guy who was from fucking South America. And he basically didn't speak any English either. So it was like three dudes who were totally stoked and broing down in this little triangle from all over the world on our little stupid fucking cult horror movies that we could grasp onto. And I told him about, you know, this movie and that movie and this movie and that movie. And he told me, you know, watch Street Trash. And I fucking downloaded it. I told him about the stuff. I was like, dude, get the stuff. Because that's another one that's like that in that same vein. It's not as good, but the fucking B-rated, like, you know, stuff's fucking awesome, too.
I haven't seen the stuff.
Oh, okay.
But I've seen Street Trash.
I don't want to ruin the stuff.
I'm all about Street Trash.
Wait till you see the stuff. It's on par with that. As far as sometimes people overact on purpose, and, like, that's my favorite shit about B-horror.
The titular line in that movie is so fucking awesome, too, because that guy's just chasing that kid for no fucking reason, and he bellows out, fucking Street Trash! And it's fucking visceral and badass.
I was in New York playing a show, and we were right in the area where that movie was filmed, and somebody brought it up, and I was just like, oh, that's so crazy.
Yeah, that's right. It was filmed in New York, right?
And it was right in Brooklyn, right near, we were playing in a place, ironically enough, called the Trash Bar, which is a piece of shit, by the way. If you're playing tours, you know, and you're going through New York City and you get that show, you know, good luck, man. Promote the fuck out of it locally before and get some fucking local dudes to come down, or you won't make any fucking money. They're like, yeah, you got to get 20 paying customers to come in to tell us at the door that we're here to see your band, and then you'll start making money.
Yeah, I actually lived in Brooklyn for a
short time. But it's free beer, Coney Island. Free well drinks and free PBR for the hour that we were playing. So, I mean,
for the band.
No, for everybody. Like, you walk in.
Everybody can get free PBR?
Yes, you can. And well.
How is this possible?
You pay like fucking $10 at the door to get in.
It's a cover charge.
Gotcha. Yeah, there's a fucking, that's my point. And you don't, as a band, you have to have 20 people to come in that said they're from your band before you start getting a take.
How did people have to pull that off in New York?
We didn't make any money. We got drunk. But man, it was fun. And I got drunk and like, I didn't mean to get drunk. Actually, I just had a good buddy, Jay, man. What's up, Jay? He lives up north of Manhattan now. But he rode his 10-speed bike from Manhattan to Brooklyn to see Heva Hava, and he said, let's have a drink. So he's like, do you want a shot? And I was like, sure. Well, when you drink with Jay, he buys you a shot. You also have a pint to go with the shot. So we had, after a couple of shots, you're drinking a pint behind it. Shit, you had three shots. You had fucking like three pints too. So you're like fucking, after a couple of drinks, you're tits up outside the bar, you know. And we had a great time. Then we played Shea Stadium, BK, not Shea Stadium where the Mets play, but like this fucking kind of hip upstairs part of a factory with fucking, they film your set and they record your set, and you have like a tangible reference point, which I've never actually never thought about when they posted it. I remember looking for Heva Hava and they never posted it. And I never went back. But maybe it's on there. Check that out.
Street Trash has an epic shoplifting scene.
Oh, in fact, that's my Shaun of the Dead fucking watching movies EP. That's the fifth song. It's Street Trash. Yeah, and it has that. He goes, "Excuse me, sir. I'd like to know what you're doing." He goes, "Well, my man, it's clear to me that what I'm doing is shopping." She goes, "There's a lady complaining that you're taking chicken out of the display case and stuffing it down your pants. And that's exactly what it appears to be to me." And he goes, he says something like, I hope you're planning on paying for that food. He goes, "I ain't planning on paying for it because I already bought it."
Yeah, he pulls out a receipt for dog food or some shit that he found on the ground outside the place.
It's so funny.
And when he fucking leaves, he doesn't go through the
door.
Anywhere's
a gas mask.
He doesn't leave through the door. No. He fucking walks right through the fucking like plate glass window right out front with fucking raw chicken coming out of his fucking pant legs and shit. Like, he doesn't give a gas mask. Like, no fucks are given from that fucking guy.
He's awesome. Yeah. All the characters are really cool. And one of the main characters, to be honest, I'm trying to think about which guy, like the Frankenhooker guy, which guy does he play in there?
Oh, he's the doorman.
Oh, okay.
The doorman that
lets
the dude walk away with that guy's girlfriend. Then they take the girlfriend to the fucking junkyard.
Do you recognize the other guy?
Kind of passes out.
Do you recognize the other fella from it?
Yeah, he's from Goodfellas.
And Goodfellas, which guy?
The guy who says boss is from Goodfellas.
Oh, okay. Well, how about the young kid who ends up with the Asian girl who's the...
Actually, I didn't recognize
He's from
him.
Pumpkinhead.
Okay.
And that would put him in... He was the redheaded kid who leads Ed Hardy over to Holla, which is another great film. Jesus Christ, watch Pumpkinhead. I've got all four of those. They start getting...
I've never seen any of the Pumpkinhead sequels, but I can't imagine they're good, but the first one was,
well, what's interesting,
right on.
Here's
the first one's like got a very good emotional core.
I cried my fucking ass off after I had a kid and watched it. I have a little boy, and like he's got glasses, and he's cute as shit and caring and sweetheart, and that motherfucker makes me cry every time.
Am I remembering this wrong? Is the kid in that movie the same kid from like Jerry Maguire?
Yeah, he looks like it, but fuck, you got to think that, you know, I want to say Pumpkinhead's probably like 1987.
Yeah.
Or something, so it certainly isn't that
good. Okay. I'm remembering it wrong.
So, how about this? Pumpkinhead 2 is kind of interesting. I think 3 is a fucking interesting. It takes place within Hetfield and McCoy.
I'm going to guess that at least one or two of these
all
is a prequel.
No, I don't think so.
None of them are prequels.
Yeah, probably. If it's Hetfield and McCoy,
be
that's before. Yeah. Okay, so here's the interesting thing is that somehow Lance Hendrickson keeps working his way back into all these films through some kind of like psyche into some protagonist where they like flash where he's like, "It ain't worth it, boy. You know it ain't worth it. I'm Ed Hardy." You know, and it's, he's like, "My shit got fucked up in the first one, remember? Don't forget about the shit I done in Holla." Pumpkinhead's great. One of the coolest monsters in all of horror films. And if we want to talk about movie monsters, what's your favorite movie monster? Ooh. As far as like the aesthetic, like when you see it, just which one just like shatters your brain and pops through all the others? Because I have several.
I go. You start so I can think, because you just dropped a question.
I know. I dropped it.
So I'll think while you speak.
Well, it's hardcore. I don't know. It's tricky, man. There's so many amazing ones. I love Hellraiser. At the latter part of Hellraiser, where it's just like creeping down the hallway, and it's like all, you know, an amalgam of all kind of like biological slimy shit, shit like that. Frankenhooker with all those body parts put together, Reanimator, things are tied together. But one of the coolest ones, obviously, of all time, as far as like what really, really shatters everything, I've got a couple, but Predator, the way that Predator, that first fucking movie, where it fucking takes his...
Right.
He pulls that fucking dirty little Slimer out, and you don't see it. He walks away from you, and finally when you see it, you're like, "Oh, that's fucking hardcore." And then it's like, "Nope, not yet." And then... you know, like that is absolutely fucking awesome. And I feel like they've kind of like jumped through, and some films have kind of like harnessed that kind of like creature-esque kind of tentacled fucking.
Right. Yeah, I would say that my favorite monster, but now I want to elaborate that on the on this. But the as monsters go, I'd say the Thing from John Carpenter's version of the Thing Jesus is the Christ. Scariest monster because it becomes you, can look like anything, and then when it actually does its like gory shit, it's absolutely fucking gory as a motherfucker.
Absolutely.
That with the tentacles flying every fucking which direction, that thing is truly frightening.
Absolutely.
As monsters go, but if I'm kind of like skirting the question a little bit, I'm very very fond of the bad guy from Nightbreed. He's not exactly a monster. He's actually like a doctor, but he's got his mask that he wears.
Oh my gosh, is, David Cronenberg's and character. He's almost under,
he's almost like underused, but he's got this like button eye mask, and it's like the scariest fucking looking dude.
It looks
and
like
he goes into those people's house.
It looks
house,
like leathery skin that's that stretched. Yeah, he slashes her across
that little
the face.
Kid's at the head of the yep. stairs, and he's standing there. It's like holy shit, you are fucked. He's gonna kill even a little kid.
Or how about the Korean film The Host?
Oh yeah, with the thing in the water. Is that
Yes, it's really funny. There's like, you know, some guys that are in a lab and there's like, oh, all this shit went bad and it's toxic, you know. And they're like, oh, just pour it down the sink. It's all good. So they're pouring the shit that starts like smoking and bubbling and shit straight into the water supply. And then you have this really treacherous beast that's like fucking all fish and teeth and claw. And it's just totally awesome. I remember watching that film. Or how about Feast? How about
really
that?
I do like the demons in Feast. And
they're very
and,
insane.
John Gulager directed with Clue Gulager alert, by the way.
Clue baby. Gulager
is in this fucking movie.
And so is his grandson.
Badass. He plays
so
bartender.
There's three generations because the baby that gets thrown is the director's son.
He is?
Absolutely. Three generations of Gulager.
You sure about that?
Of course, motherfucker.
Did
special
not
features,
that.
Baby.
I guess I haven't watched the special features. I'm actually...
I love that. Dude, you know what's funny?
I'm Facebook friends with John Gulager and his wife.
I just rewatched the... I rewatched Feast's trilogy and the last one. It's so fucking awesome. I remember, you know, when he was... The first time I watched it, he's like... Some guy gets his arm ripped off and then this one gets hurt and he's like, I got you, boy. This is going to hurt. And he takes a bullet and pours like a fucking, you know, like a shitload of gunpowder in there and he's like,
oh yeah,
that's
too
much.
His whole
goes,
fucking arm.
And then
off
he goes, "It
shit.
Works. It worked in Rambo 3." And like,
yeah,
that just fucking killed me because I am that kind of guy that likes to go back and watch film, whether it's like a true merit or just I want to know. You know, like inquiring minds want to know. I watched all those fucking movies. So.
Right. So
Rambo, you know, it's you know, it, let's just go right to the music from First Blood right here. Okay. Yeah, that's fucking insane. Good old Frank Stallone. Got to keep that guy at work. Thanks, Sly.
What are you talking about?
That song we just played, man.
That's Frank Stallone did the music to
the
First
theme
Blood?
Song. Yeah, absolutely. That road is long and each step is only the beginning. You know that song. It's a long road when you're on your road.
You are jumping around pretty goddamn
Jesus
good
Christ.
On me.
You know, my favorite one, my favorite part of the song is that part was like, it's a real war outside your front door, I'll tell you. Out where they'll kill you, you could use a friend.
Can anybody send us like a prescription for Ritalin or some Adderall or something to calm this guy down?
Fuck you, man. I wrote a song this week. It goes, why should I have to turn it down? Why can't you just turn it up? Match my intensity, you lazy
you
fuck.
Okay. What other horror films have you watched so far this Halloween?
Well, I woke up. I don't know if this counts, October. But I have a playlist, and my films just kind of go, you know, A through Z. And I fell asleep watching something, and I woke up, and it was The Shining. So I saw like a ladder. like 5-6 minutes of The Shining, which if you only watch that section, it's incredibly effective. It puts you on edge. You're like, oh shit, she's getting in the snowmobile to escape. The dude's like, you know, the blood comes down the hallway, the fucking kid's getting chased down through the fucking maze.
But I personally consider The Shining to be personally the most effective horror film I've ever seen.
Holy shit.
It's the one that works the best on me. Going back to the first time I've seen it, I have muscle memory from that. And actually, that's the book I'm reading at the moment, is Stephen King's The Shining, because I think it's ridiculous that I've seen the movie, 60 some odd times, and I had never bothered to read the book. So this October, that's my Halloween horror reading material, is Stephen King's The Shining.
I can tell you that I have plans to watch several films, and if you want to talk about those, I can get on that shit. Because,
no, I mean, we'll probably record yet another podcast here in October to put some more in there, but we're just getting started. Like I say, I'm trying to watch films for the first time, this particular one, and... It seems ridiculous that I'd never seen it until now, but I watched Takashi Miike's Audition.
Ooh.
And I can tell you this. You guys might be upset with me for this, but I got to tell you, it's so far my least favorite Takashi Miike film I've ever seen. It's very subdued. It takes a while to get where it's going. And then when it finally gets where it's going, it's basically just this chick, you know, tortures this guy.
Yeah.
And you know it's got some really interesting mind stuff in there.
But isn't that part of a trilogy? Doesn't that correlate with like Sympathy for Mr. Vengeance or some shit?
No. That's a different director. That's
I didn't get into any of that shit.
Fuck, that's a Korean director.
Audition have to do something specifically with like?
I think Audition's standalone, but it's an early Takashi Miike film. Miike is, of course, most famous Ichi the Killer.
Or Gozu.
Yeah, Gozu.
Or just Ichi.
Suki Western Django.
Sukiyaki Western Django, yeah. And then there's also, he did, for the Masters of Horror, he did the last episode of the season that was actually banned, I think. It was called Imprint.
Yeah, yeah.
Which I have the box set. Check it out over there, man. It's like The Crypt.
Yeah, I really like his films, but I think Miike is best when he's bug nuts. When his movies are fucking kind of really off the hook, yeah. I think that's when he's at his best.
Gozu,
that's my personal
crazy
opinion. Audition felt more like a chore to make it through. But it is, the gore in it is really visceral.
I would actually agree with that. And I think that probably is what sold the movie for me. As far as that film goes, I would actually agree with you 100%.
Yeah.
That it creates that kind of like feeling of a responsibility where you're like, oh, I have to watch this now. Because there is that kind of like, I feel like in the past, I actually don't have Audition in my collection.
Yeah, and however, I could see someone who's a huge Miike fan, like listening to what I just said and be like, oh, that's just blasphemy. It'd be like someone telling me, dude, Eraserhead's really hard for me to watch and shit and stuff.
I'd be like,
get out.
Hey, look at me. I watch. I've sat through Eraserhead probably like 25 times. I don't think I've ever made it through the entire film.
What?
Because I always end up watching it in an inopportune time, and I'm never kind of like, oh, I'm going to rewatch that. I'm just like, I'll watch Eraserhead again. It's just like, this movie's fucking crazy the whole time. And you know, like, there's that specific film, like, there's a certain, like, quality in those unseen kind of acts that he reveals, and that's kind of cool. And I feel like that's the magic of his film, is that he kind of, like, opens a door and a window to a place that you can't even imagine. And that's really, I think, the effectiveness of that guy. That, like, go ahead and close your eyes, everybody out there. Now, think of something really fucked up. Like, think of something depraved and very inhuman, sadistic, but yet sort of refined and classy and elegant at the same time, where it's kind of like an indulgent, vile.
And we are speaking about Lynch, right?
Either or Miike. Both, yeah. And I'm just saying, as far as film goes, those films create this thing that's very, like, intangible, but as soon as you experience it, you realize, you're like, oh, shit, it's getting real. And you can kind of, like, experience that in a way as if you were in real life, because it is such a foreign kind of a thing. You know, like that chick fucks that dude up, and it's like not in a...
She totally fucks
that
dude up.
I mean, there's a lot of wire involved, you know?
Yeah,
there's
she's like, sticking needles all the way in, like deep into his body.
And it's pretty neat.
Like explaining to him, taking the time to explain to him that like deeper in your body, your nerve endings are blah, blah, blah. She's got needles going in behind his eyeballs.
So there's certain elements of that are very interesting and make the movie worth watching for sure.
That specific moment doesn't take place until the climax of the film, right, like an hour and a half in. It takes an hour and a half to build the tension of what is this guy doing to try to find a relationship and shit like that. And it's a fine film. I don't care if I ever see it again personally. First of all, in all honesty, torture porn horror is my least favorite kind of horror. Like movies like Hostel and stuff don't exactly do it for me. And I only saw the very first Saw film. Okay. And I don't care about the rest of them. I'll speak specifically about the film.
What I can say about Saw from just a horror movie fan, I did watch all of them because I was curious on how they were going to up the ante with their special effects. Because the visceral violence in Saw is very creative. And the way that they do those shots are very like, they stir all kind of different apple trees, so to speak, for different kinds of people. They're like, what kind of shit? What are people afraid of? Let's just make a list. Okay, now in this film, we're going to tap into that guy. This guy's afraid of needles. Okay, this guy's afraid of fire. And they kind of like prey on human fear. But when they create these torture devices, it's really creative, dude. Like, I want to say in the second or third movie, there's one where there's a guy that's like completely racked up and he's geared and all of his limbs and everything are connected to a gear that's spinning in counter to where it's supposed to. So at some point, all of his arms and legs just start like compound fracturing and twisting apart. There's like a junkie girl who like falls into a giant pitfall of needles, like used like biological fucking waste needles.
Oh, fuck.
Or like a girl who has to get something from up above her. And she reaches in, and then it's all, like, knives and stuff. And, like, you know, there's just so many different elements of that that are just really fucked up. And I thought the element of everything about the background of that is, like, oh, some guy's, like, trying to teach people lessons because he lost somebody he loved, and now he's, like, trying to change the world by being everyone's bane. But take all that shit away. Like, I think that aspect of the movie is kind of stupid.
But the
application of it is magnificent. So what I'm suggesting is if they were to take those main plot points that make it so important, of like, oh, Jigsaw, blah, 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 fuck Jigsaw. Watch this person get fucking dusted and then go to the next one. And then you got a quality horror flick. Because then it turns into Faces of Death.
There once was a time where there wasn't six Saw films, where there wasn't a popular culture consciousness of what these films were. So when the first one hit, there was a trailer for it. In the trailer, you didn't know what the puzzle was. You didn't know what the backstory was. You didn't know anything. There's just this trailer for one movie called Saw, and that trailer looked, holy shit, we better go fucking see this.
Yeah, and I was actually, and I thought it was kind of psychological.
And we went and saw it, and I can tell you the best part about that movie was that there was a trailer for The Devil's Rejects. Fuck you, Saw. So
I didn't see it until here's after
the thing.
It came
here's
out.
The thing. In the theater, watching Saw with the expectations of whatever that first trailer set up, and at the end of the film, the people that I went to with we all looked at each other like, "So the big bad scary killer guy was the guy lying on the floor the whole fucking time? Fuck this movie!"
Right.
And yes, his motivations for something bad happened to him. So I'm gonna do this to all these people. But in the first Saw film, which is the only one I saw, he wasn't actually doing any of that shit.
Right.
He had another guy that he was like threatening.
Right.
To do it,
and so that's
that
how
guy,
it all happens.
That guy, this guy who wasn't a killer, did all that shit.
Just wait till you get to like,
and it's like let's scratch our heads and think about this for a second. Here's the news.
Let me put some puzzles
instead
together.
Like, of me building torture devices and having people cut their own foots off and shit. Here's what I'm gonna do. I'm gonna call the cops. End of fucking movie. Of course, you can't have that movie. You have the movie that did exist, and the movie that exists was there's a dead guy on the floor the whole fucking movie. At the end of the movie, the big twist is he gets up. He gets up. He wasn't dead. He was the guy on the floor. Woo! And the credits are now rolling, and I go, fuck this fucking movie.
You know, it's the funniest thing is you haven't seen any of the others.
No, I have not
seen
any
of the
others.
You're underestimating the fact that, like, in the second or third movie, the guy's dead, and the guy doing an autopsy finds a tape and listens to it, and he's like, hello, agent, blah, blah, blah. I can tell that blah, blah, blah by now, blah, blah, blah. So somehow this fucking guy ends up being in all the films, and then at the very end, somehow you realize, and he always has minions that are by the balls. All of his people.
So it's the plot from Friday the 13th, Part 5.
Jason isn't even real. You shouldn't have hacked it. You shouldn't. Don't fuck with people's candy bars.
It doesn't surprise me one bit that it
spins all the way around, and it somehow ties back to that original Saw movie. And Cary Elwes is back, and he turns out to be.
Didn't Cary Elwes cut his foot off in that movie?
I think so. And at the end of the movie, he has something to do with it. And he's the guy who carried on the legacy the whole time behind everybody's back. And it was like really fucking elaborate. And when you finally get that twist, you're like, fuck you, Saw. Like, what the fuck's the point? It's kind of like without, like, okay, here's the deal. We talked about Feast. Jesus Christ, at the end of the third movie, it's so awesome.
Feast is the lone
survivor is fucking right there. Boom, a Transformer just smashes him. Some Mexican comes out and he starts singing in Spanish and he goes, I don't know what the fuck's going on with the plot anyway.
Yep.
I don't know. They just wrote it that way. Fuck you. And like, it's just so amazing. And then,
Feast is truly then
Clue,
yep.
and the, Clue the pops up at the end and he just looks at the camera again for one final reprisal and he's just like, God damn it. Anyhow, the point is, with that film, it's kind of like you get to the end and it's the opposite of that. They give you that kind of ending where it's kind of like, oh, peekaboo. And you're just like, you know what? It took too long. You know, I agree with you. The Saw movies are not like in
and
my
bear
top.
In mind, I'm only going on what the first one is. I get the special effects correct. And the gore and,
yeah.
and the, and
if
the
you just
elaborate
literally,
kills and the Rube Goldberg machines.
Here's the deal. If you were to take all the Saw kills, put them in a compilation with some kind of cool, like, laid-back, kind of like Portishead music, and, like, you know, something that's kind of, like, laid-back and chill with all this horrible imagery, I think that would be a cool movie to watch. You make an hour-long movie and call it Saw.
Yeah.
And you take away all the fucking bullshit, and you just have something that's kind of soothing sonically, but terrifying visually, and that would be stimulating and interesting.
It's basically an X-rated Marilyn Manson video.
There you go. All right. How about, what kind of music you've been listening to?
I'm not done. I've actually been watching some horror films.
Okay, well,
and some recommendations, some newer films and some non-recommendations. And here's one I know you just saw recently because I saw you had the DVD case of it. So I just watched it, and it's a new film, 2015.
Are we talking Supernatural?
It is a remake, and I do not understand why they bothered. And it's Poltergeist. Poltergeist, of course, the original one, directed by Tobe Hooper, probably secretly directed by Steven Spielberg.
Correct.
But Tobe Hooper did the first one. The new one, I don't know who the director is. It doesn't matter. It's basically, by the numbers, the same movie, basically.
I actually watched this last night, and I fell asleep.
Here's the thing about it. It's a perfectly... The movie works with it's passable as far as its movies goes, but why does it exist? Why bother remaking that movie by the numbers and not bring anything artistically to the table? It's a serviceable film. It works as well. That was a movie and I got to the end of it and whatever, but fuck this movie. It takes a lot of money. And it takes a lot of effort and a lot of artistic talent to bring everybody together. And we're going to do this thing. And here's why we're going to do it. And I believe in this project. And why did you do this? Why did you do this? Why did you spend this money? Why did you get these actors together? Sam Rockwell is awesome. I love that fucking actor.
And actually, I thought I really enjoyed what he was bringing to the film as I was watching. I was like, man, he's like a cool dad. He's funny and like he's like impulsive. And like I thought that Coach was a little bit more like, I guess.
Someone commented on Nostalgia Factor's Instagram, which on Instagram I'm sharing all of the horror films that I'm watching, giving really short, like maybe 3-sentence reviews of them and letting them know and putting up a picture. And some people are commenting, and one person commented on the Poltergeist that they really liked when Sam Rockwell was like, he's at dinner with somebody and they're telling him, like, you know, that that entire neighborhood was built over top of a cemetery. And he just kind of goes, that's not like cool, is it?
Yeah. Yeah, it's awesome.
No, it is not.
That's
cool.
What I thought was really funny is that, you know, he's like, yeah, he's like, come with me to the dinner party. You know, you can watch me drink bourbon. And I was just like, that's a good guy. Like, he's talking to his wife and he's like, come on, babe, your motivation will be just like, come and watch me get drunk with a bunch of dicks I don't care about. We got to do this together. Let's go.
It's just one of those films, another one of those remakes.
But to be honest with you, I hadn't gotten too far into it. Like, I got into a point where, like, you know, they found like a secret. They found a squirrel and stuff, and he impulse bought a bunch of shit. And at some point, I woke up in the night, and like, you know, they don't have the little midget lady anymore. They got this fucking TV, like the fucking Coast is Clear kind of dick walking through.
Yeah, that's Jared Harris. Jared
He's a
Harris,
great actor.
Which is Richard's Harris' son. Richard Harris being the amazing actor. Probably, I don't know what awards Richard Harris has gotten, but he's an old school. I think Richard Harris has passed on now, but he was incredible.
Huh.
But yeah, there's like three kinds of remakes. There's the one remake that's like, holy fucking shit, 3 minutes, and they fucking did it right. They nailed it, man. It's fucking like the Texas Chainsaw remake, Texas Chainsaw Massacre remake. Like, obviously the original still exists. If that's the one you prefer, it's fucking awesome. I think the remake is also fucking awesome. It's really fucking good. Like, that's how you remake a movie when you bring it here. Then there's the movie that's like total fucking shit. I'm trying to think of a remake that's total goddamn garbage. Like, oh, you fucking blew it. You fucking assholes. And there's so many of them, but I just drop them out of my fucking skull.
How about I Spit on Your Grave?
I haven't seen that.
The
Last House on the Left.
I mean, these remakes.
Just why?
You know what? Another one that they did, I think that was like really good, was what was it that they rebooted? Kind of. Not really rebooted.
Like, we don't have any fucking ideas. Let's make this fucking movie and do it horribly and cash in. Fuck the fuck off.
Michael Bay, you know?
Michael Bay is actually involved in the Texas Chainsaw remake.
No, but I'm saying he did. I think he was the one that did. I'm trying to think of what. It's Friday the 13th, the final cut, or the director's cut, or whatever.
The new Friday the
13th. The new one, yeah. Right. They like.
Or even the new Nightmare on Elm Street. That movie's garbage.
The Nightmare on Elm Street was pretty bad, yeah. But there were elements of it that I thought were interesting. Like,
there's elements of it, but it's just it's.
Yeah, that was a horrible remake.
Like, you're not going to get any sequels to that film. We're going to have to reboot Nightmare on Elm Street again,
yeah,
because that movie sucked.
What else was there? There's a few other ones that.
And what I'm saying is the Poltergeist film isn't quite that bad. It's just. Right there in the middle where it's like, we did it by the numbers. We remade this movie. Why the fuck bother? Oh my God, the amount of money and effort it took to bring that to the screen, and you've done basically nothing.
You know, a good trilogy that's going on, and I really like, is Hatchet.
I've seen the first one.
It was
serviceable. It's
they've
cool.
Got,
cool
they've got.
I
Kane
have bad memories of the day around that.
Kane Hodder, obviously the stuntman.
Kane Hodder's the Hatchet
Jason.
Guy?
Yeah, Victor Crowley. And then each film gets chronologically and exponentially more like irreverent in their stuff. But
I'm trying to think of what the premise was. I know they were just in the bayou. Maybe,
yeah, they're
like
in the bayou and they're
shooting
like
a little mockumentary kind of thing or something.
Well, no, that's Bayou Beavers. That's one guy. But what it is basically a couple of buddies go down for this thing and they decide to go on a like a haunted swamp ride. And that's actually like been banned because it actually is fucking haunted and is fucking dangerous. And there is some kind of like a Neanderthal kind of a mutant, like hillbilly kind of inbred dude who got murdered and comes back every night to relive the night. The third movie starts out with like Gwar as the theme music.
Like, literally? Oh, okay. I was going to say where they were in the movie. Cool.
No, that would have been awesome. But like, you know, it's like the credits are rolling and it's Gwar playing Genocide from the record. Bloody Pit of Horror. But anyhow, Hatchet's really fucking cool. I'd recommend that this season. But what I'm trying to think of some other movies that they redid where it was just kind of like, oh man.
There's plenty of them, but it's kind of those are the kind of movies that we try to forget about. And so now that we're trying to remember, it's a little hard.
I remember I was kind of apprehensive about Predators.
Predators was good.
Well, when I went back and rewatched it, I was like, holy shit, the concept of this is way far-fetched and fucked, and it created like an entire new puzzle piece that they could build on because I really want more Predator. Like, Alien versus Predator.
Let me tell you something. If you want more Predator, read comic books.
There is
a shit ton of really cool Predator comic books, and there's including Predator versus Aliens.
Versus Ash.
And they're actually good.
Is it going to be versus Ash?
Well, the Ash one, they have like
Freddy versus Jason
versus Ash.
And then they have
not read it though.
How about this?
It is.
Marvel Zombies versus Ash.
I've heard of that one too, but haven't sat down and watched
it's,
it. But
there's
that
something
seems
to be
like
said
it'd be
about
out of his element because those Marvel zombies have their powers. So Ash versus the Hulk, not such a great idea, Ash.
Yeah, it's pretty interesting concepts, to be honest, man.
Of course, you can always trick the Hulk as long as the Hulk isn't in full rage mode.
What I want to do is I want to get a fucking Predator movie that elaborates on its planet and creates a society rather than having, you know, like people isolated on a planet with like one group of predators. I want to see a planet of predators, see what their society is like, and then have like Harrison Ford in there with fucking like Indiana Jones versus Predator, you know, like
just get all buck wild with all the characters versus other characters, huh?
Yeah, you know, get fucking okay, here's another one. This isn't necessarily a horror movie, but this is another one I'm gonna be watching because I love it, and I think it's got a great element of suspense. There are moments in it that are just like spellbinding in the fact that it's just so fucked up, and just it comes from this angle that's just like maniacal in a way where you're just trapped and you just kind of see it. And I'm talking about Stephen King's Misery.
Stephen King's Misery is a horror film
with James Caan and Kathy Bates.
Absolutely.
Of course, it's a horror film. Saying like it's not necessarily like as far as gore goes and like a slasher film or whatever. But it's very psychological, it still goes in the bucket. Very effective. Oh, that's why I'm recommending.
Horror is a very large
trough
for different genres within horror, for sure.
What else you got?
Okay, so this is a huge recommendation. This is a brand new film. It stars Elijah Wood and Rainn Wilson from The Office.
I missed it.
And House of a Thousand Corpses, Rainn Wilson.
I don't
think he goes by that.
Or how about Super?
Yeah, Super. I think Rainn Wilson is fucking awesome. How about Rocker? Yeah, Rocker. He's got a new television show, but I can't remember the name of it.
He plays Dwight.
Yeah, he plays Dwight on The Office. But it's him and Elijah Wood, and it's called Cooties. And Cooties,
I feel like I read something about that on IMDb.
Highly recommend this. It's on video on demand right now. It's brand new. But Cooties is Elijah Wood is a substitute teacher. He gets called into his old school where he used to go when he was a little kid. And within no time, the little kids start contracting a virus that they get from eating the chicken McNuggets. And it turns them into basically murder zombies. And they start tearing people apart, eating them. It's nightmare fuel for teachers.
Oh, that sounds great.
And it is probably one of the funniest like visceral horror films. Now, nice. I've got another film that I watched that was also maybe even funnier than that, but it's a documentary. But this, I know, I'm going there.
Are you talking about it?
But first, we're going to talk about Cooties.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yes, Cooties is freaking hilarious. I cannot recommend this enough. It's kind of lowbrow, like the effects are like, like whatever. But seriously, whatever. You just look past that kind of stuff when the movie is this funny. And it's seriously, they have to kill little kids and stuff in this movie. And that's, you don't do that. You don't do that in video games. You don't do that in movies. And this movie, they're like, you know, technically these kids aren't kids anymore. They're zombies. And they like brain them. And it's like, so funny.
Battle Royale, they brought some of that out.
My favorite line is, Rainn Wilson is spreading gasoline. Like they wind up at like a Chuck E. Cheese kind of place, and all the little kids are in jungle gyms, and they're about to come out and get them. And Rainn Wilson's spreading gasoline everywhere, and he pulls out a match. He goes, "I'm gonna give you kids an F for fuck off." Blows up all these children, and it's like, dude, this movie rules.
Great, so, I'm gonna have to see that.
High recommendation. Please see Cooties. It's great.
Damn, I can't wait.
The other comedy one, I'll even let you go ahead. You know what it is.
I just look at your face and I want to say What We Do in the Shadows.
It is What We Do in the Shadows.
We're talking about a New Zealand documentary about vampires and life as a vampire. And man, what a jolly good display of fucking great writing and dry tongue-in-cheek humor.
Extremely. The best comedy bits. You can't even do dialogue for it. It's just the looks they give the camera. Like two vampires fighting in the kitchen, and the third vampire just gives the camera a look like, you see what I got to deal with?
Yeah, oh my
God.
It's
so fucking funny.
I love Pete.
Which one was Pete?
Pete is Nosferatu in the basement. Isn't that his name? Where he's like,
yeah,
he's 8,000.
Peter.
And he's like 8,000 years old, and it's like, you know.
You understand that the supply closet demon?
Yeah, absolutely. What cracks me up about this film is that the characters take themselves so seriously, and they have this pride and their own individually like projected forward pride in being a vampire. So he's like, I'm 863 years old, and in my day, blah, blah, blah. And then it's like, this guy is the new guy, and he's 300 years old.
Just in case you haven't seen this film, the premise is there's a house flat, and you might have roommates, but these are four old vampires from different centuries. So one vampire might be 150 years old. Another vampire is 300 years old. Another vampire is like 700 years old.
And then you got this motherfucker in the basement. Yeah, it's like 8,000. Like,
yeah.
And he doesn't even speak. He just goes, wah! And he is literally Nosferatu. They designed it specifically from that film. And the irreverence of it, some of the lines, oh my God. I can't remember the name of the actor.
I'll give you one. Basically, one of the funnier parts of it is they get their familiar to bring a couple people over for dinner, and so they're asking her questions like, "And are you the virgin?" But then they do the thing like the TV show The Office, where they kind of like cut to, and then they're interviewing them straight into the camera. He's like, "What is it with the virgin thing?" It's like, "I don't know. It's like the virgin thing. It's like it's cool, you know." And then they ask, "Let's like it goes to the other guy, and he explains the virgin thing. He's like, "Virgin thing." He's like, think of it like this. If you were to say, I don't know, make yourself a sandwich, it might taste better to you if you knew that no one had ever fucked it.
That's it. That's the one, man. Killer. I like when he's going on about the beast, you know. He's talking about like this, his ex. He's like, the beast. You know, he's just going on. It's the worst merciless creature. And it's like, you know,
he gets anxiety, and it turns out
it's his ex-wife or his ex-girlfriend. And like the whole time you're thinking about this, like he shows photographs of it. And it's like a horned beast with like, you know, like hoofs and shit.
Yeah. Every time they mention the beach, the dude gets a little bit older. Yeah. By the time it's like right before the party where they're going to actually see her again, the dude looks like he's aged like 600 years.
And
he looks like a corpse and he's like, I don't know if I feel up to going. So awesome.
And then they turn someone into a vampire, and Pete like eats the guy, and he's like, "Well, you turned me into a vampire." And
yeah,
he's
they
like,
chase him out the door, and Peter eats.
He's
the
real
guy.
Stoked. And like, there's a scene where he like tries to eat food, and then he like pukes blood for like 10 minutes, right?
Right.
It's just like projectile, like. That's
all. Yeah, because he ate a French fry.
He ate like French fries. I can't eat fucking chips anymore.
Yeah, I mean, you can't talk about this movie without mentioning the werewolves in it.
Oh God, that's
the werewolves.
Funny.
They're like
they have
kind of like, hipster bros, and they're just kind of out there, kind of leading the pack, and they've got like little rules from themselves. Like, man, what's with all the swearing? We're werewolves, not swearwolves.
Yeah, it's funny. It's almost like the Warriors in that they have like their own little clique. You know, it's almost like this is our territory and this is the gang. You know, obviously. The comedy in that is like just seeing that chemistry between the camera and the actor, like you were saying, that mockumentary stuff where people are just like, they put you in this position of like ambiguity. They look at the camera and they're kind of like, I'm going to relish that moment for a second. Or like, you know, they put you in like, what the fuck? Like, that guy is fucked. Like, what the fuck is going on?
Anyway, that's the films that I've seen so far. It's only like the 10th of October at this point. I work full time, so those are the horror films I've seen so far in October. With the next podcast, we'll be talking about a little bit more of these. But music wise, how is the new Iron Maiden and?
I haven't. It's a fucking computer, dude. That's why I plugged up the goddamn cable. I was going to go see what that was all about. And I got the malware fucking wise bars boxing me out. So
well,
I can
tell you that I haven't listened to the new Slayer record, but I did see that video for their single. And that thing's balls to
the wall. Single for Relentless. Yeah, dude.
Relentless is this. What's the name of the album for new Slayer?
It's Repentless is the name.
Repentless.
Yeah, that's the name of the song. Repentless. The title track they made a music video for. And it is essentially a jailbreak riot that just full-blown jail shivs, drill yard, fucking smash them up with fists and weapons of any kind and all kinds.
All the most violent parts of Natural Born Killers prison scenes, like, pumped up to volume 10.
Yeah, or 11 even. There's like some very visceral violence.
There's people
and then
getting their eyes gouged out.
There's a scene, the very last little scene. It's like a dude like gets out of his cell. And then obviously it's like two badass like leaders, and then one on one they go bare knuckle. One guy fucking just totally kills the other one, and then he just walks back in his cell and sits down. Like that was the entire reason for the riot, so he could fucking murder the other guy. And it was just like so crazy. And the dude had a patch over his eye, so he was like real badass, like Nick Fury, old school fucking comics, you know. And Yeah, dude, and they've, you know, Slayer's just, I'm glad that they're still rolling, you know.
The music that I've been geeking out on, first off, there's the new Lana Del Rey, her Honeymoon album.
Oh, I didn't know
which
that.
Which I don't like as much as Born to Die. It's no Born to Die 2, but it is really good. It's just not capturing me the way her first album did. The other, some other new music. The new Churches album. That's Churches with a V instead of a U.
They did that because it's easier to find them on the internet. If you type in Churches on the internet, I read that on one of those stupid fucking. I was sitting somewhere and they had the indie channel on the satellite, and it gives you like little. Did you know about the bands? And it said Churches. You chose to use V's instead of U's, so people could find their band on the internet easier. I think that's a good idea.
There's like I always shake my head when someone names their movie or names their band something that you couldn't possibly Google. It always drives me completely crazy.
Churches
is extremely catchy as fuck. And their new album blows away their old one, in my opinion. I'm not sure what the single's called, but my favorite track off it is called The Downside of Me. And, man, I really, really love it. It's one of those songs that I'll listen to it to the end and immediately bump it right back and start all over again. I just love that song.
Nice. I've been rocking a couple things, but not too, you know, like recently, I listened to a little Half Dog Jury.
Oh, okay. I've heard of them.
We've had a couple passings with the little Indian song. Tobin loves that for some reason, and I always hear it. And
nice.
I love that, dude. There's something about it that's just like, I rocked that a lot in my playlist, and I've kind of revisited a lot of different like older metal stuff.
Well,
and,
for the nostalgia factor listeners who don't know, Half Dog Jury is my band. It's a little, I don't know, took a little long break from it when we lost some band members. We're getting started on it again, starting recording new Half Dog Jury material. But
featuring myself, Shaun of the Dead.
The Little Indian song was written by my ex-girlfriend. It's not exactly written by her. What it was, I think that's like an old standard-ish kind of thing, like something you might play at like a stadium. Like Brave Stadium. It's one of those
I just like the fucking tone of it. It reminds me of
We elaborated. I get a visual. She played on the keyboard one time, and then we elaborated on it, and we kind of like did our thing. So that's that.
But
song.
I'm rocking out like, you know, I have all these. And my music collection is really vast. Just alone, what I have in my iTunes
and eclectic,
like 2,000 records or something. But like I was revisiting Anvil. You know, they've got like, I want to say like 12 or 13 records probably, and they're really.
I only know them from the movie.
And you know, that's what's really interesting is you watch their movie and you're kind of like curious about these dudes and their career. But their first, you know, like what I can say about Anvil is that their drummer Rob Reiner like really hits the fucking drums properly, and he puts the beats and emphasis in the place that creates fucking super power rock. And Lips has got the shit down with the guitar and the lyrics and the style he sings. Like lyrically, if you read their lyrics, they're kind of corny in a way. But at the same time, the band itself projects a rocky kind
of
like.
Let's be clear. A lot of metal lyrics are pretty corny.
Yeah, but some of them transcend the corniness with how rad. Like, I don't know. I'm all about pizza and fucking zombies in my metal. But, I'm, you know, like, it doesn't have to be like that. But, yeah, there's a song, School of, first song on their first record, Hard and Heavy. Really cool riff, you know. Also, dude, Bitter End. I think they were from Texas. But I think they might have made one record. Harsh Realities from, like, 1989, 1990. You actually heard a bit of it earlier. I was listening to that when you showed up.
The one that I thought sounded like
Megadeth. It sounds kind of like Megadeth, but it also, because it's from 1990, it also has kind of like a, not really rappy, but just the way that the vocal goes, like the nuance. Some of the stuff's a little bit more like jazzy than straight thrash, but it's a killer thrash album. I would recommend that. Bitter End, Harsh Realities.
Yep. Got a little bit out of a Smashing Pumpkins kick at work the other day. Really, it's kind of it for music with me. Churches. I've been listening to that almost nonstop, new Churches album.
I listened to some Police. I've been playing drums. I was like listening to Police last week.
Oh, the fucking Police.
I'm a huge fan of the poppy aspect of the Police. And what I really want to emphasize outwardly.
The
is
police
that
write those kinds of songs that get stuck in your head, and those are.
And what's really, really intense is that, like, I don't know about you guys out there, but, like, you know, growing up, you hear the Police songs, and a lot of them, you know, like, you hear all of them, you know. You hear, like, the majority, there isn't, like, a Police song that you don't know. But what you don't usually do is absorb exactly what Sting's lyrics are saying. And there were songs that
and
I was, like.
They're usually really dark,
they're
his lyrics.
Very, like, he is an incredible writer. His
that,
lyrics.
What is that song, King of Pain?
I'm not sure, dude. I don't know. Like, I just was listening to the shit, and I remember thinking, like, wow, these lyrics are so heavy and political and conscious, and they're, like, asking questions, and they're, like, pointing the finger. And in this way, that was just, like, how cool. Like, I had recognized these songs for years and years in my head, where I'm like, yeah, I know these songs, you know. And for some reason, like, playing drums, I was kind of like, Stuart Copeland's a bad motherfucker, you know. Like, I'm going to try to, like, hear some of his stuff. And
as I recall, Les Claypool recorded an album with those guys.
Yeah, there's a record. No, what it is there's a record. There's a three-piece band that was created featuring Trey Anastasio from Phish, Les Claypool from Primus, and Stuart Copeland from
the
Police, and it was
record?
Called Oysterhead.
Oysterhead.
And they have some really cool Oysterhead is that record. And it's cool, man. I rock that out. The Army's on ecstasy, so they say. I read all about it in USA Today. They stepped up urine testing to make it go away, because it's hard to kill the enemy on old MDMA. I think that is a fucking cool record. When all else has been done and said, along comes Mr. Oysterhead.
Les Claypool and, always turns shit a little bit Sesame Street. Now,
but
he?
What's really fucking cool is that everybody in that band is the fucking guy in their band. Like, make no mistake about it. If you just, like, look at their bands, look at Phish. Okay, that dude, like, I'm not in the Phish. I've had a lot of friends that were in the Phish.
I'm not in the Phish.
I listened to a record at one time. And I thought
I'm into the culture around Phish.
There was a song called Divided Sky that was interesting. And I really liked that. It was kind of, you know, it was just like kind of a weird thing, but it was just like, you know, I'm just not into that kind of stuff so much, you know? Anyhow, so that guy's obviously, he stands out in his group as kind of like whatever. Les obviously creates the atmosphere. And then Stuart is obviously like a driving force. I've watched a couple documentaries about the Police, and he has such a great charisma. And to see him and Sting, it's like, he calls him out, you know, he's like, you fucking priss. You know, this is my fucking shit. This is going to be on the cover of Modern Drummer, you fucking cunt. Watch this shit. Like, he's like, oh, you know, it's very nice to see the interaction of those dudes. There's a documentary live album combination called Certifiable. And it's like a live concert in Rio de Janeiro or Buenos Aires or some shit. And it's like, you know, within the past, like, 5-6 years ago, they did it. But they have a documentary made by Stuart Copeland's son, and it's hilarious because their chemistry is like that. They're kind of like two.
The Police have a documentary called.
Yeah, it's
Certifiable.
Right here. Live in Buenos Aires. It's interesting. I got it for like $10.
What era was this filmed in?
2000, early 2010s, maybe.
Really?
Or two? Yeah, probably. Maybe not. I don't know. But what was interesting about it was just to see that chemistry, you know. So you got, with the Oysterhead, you have those dudes just totally being the front man or the driving force of their group. And when you put them all together, they create some pretty fucking interesting stuff. I haven't listened to that record in probably, you know, close to 10 years. But I had a few tracks on tape. I was always driving cars that had tape decks, and you know, I always had cool mixtapes, and I had a Buckethead, Oysterhead thing going on. Ninja Turtles, yeah. Tobin's showing us Leonardo.
Anyway, you got anything else?
Gonna build a skate ramp.
Cool, Dad. Let's do it.
Yeah, here's what I promise. I won't get on that with a skateboard. I'll die.
But you can help film. And I have a really interesting concept that I'd like to do. I'd like to mount a camera, and I'd like to film our... I think we could probably build it all in a day. I'd like to get the supplies. We show up, drop the supplies off. We're filming. Fucking build the ramp, and then we start skating and have like a fucking... Then we film the skate session and have a little skate video. It's like 10 minutes long. We build the ramp in about 3 minutes, and then we skate for about 7. and we edit footage to just have us only doing the tricks that we land. Or only,
of course,
you know,
usually works,
you know how,
unless you want to make a compilation of fails,
or unless you want to fucking be a pro skater and be in a real video and like have fun and get free shoes and pants and shit, you can look like a goddamn boss. But Halloween's coming up. I got a show this Halloween, my band Fat Jagger's first show. We've been working for about a year on our material. We are definitely garage rats, basement rats when it comes to our music. We are just have been cultivating a sound and working on our riffs and kind of elaborating on these really interesting concepts that our a guitarist and frontman has created. And alas, we're finally going to break out and we're going to do like a Halloween kind of thing. So we've got a couple sets coming up that we need to start practicing on pretty heavily. We've got a couple weeks to do it. So,
I look forward to it.
Yeah, I think that's going to be real
cool.
October 30th
in Floyd, Virginia.
31st.
31st.
So I think at some point between now and then, we're going to try to get somebody together to maybe do a little video for it or at least record. And then we can have a tangible, you know, like this is Fat Jagger to put on the internet, because I typed in Fat Jagger on the on Google and I got one thing and it was actually like a YouTube video.
Well, it's a good name for a band. I'll be the first one to tell you if I think your band name
sucks.
Oh,
she reached under the table and she grabbed my Fat Jagger, dude.
There you go.
You know.
All right. Well, that's the Nostalgia Factor podcast for the early part of October. We're going to probably hit up one more, I hope. To talk about it. Maybe it'll come out slightly after Halloween where we talk about the rest of the horror films that we've seen this month. And check us out on Facebook, Twitter, YouTube, Vine, Instagram, Tumblr. We're all over the place. It's Nostalgia Factor. Send us a message. Hit us with your feedback. Thanks
a lot for
listening.
Thrash metal, horror movies, rock and roll, pizza. We'll see you later.
Late.
Factor.com.